just tired reading it. Please welcome John Gilder to Cloud Computing West.
Thank you. Ooh, that was a nasty hook there. Thanks. So I'm going to discuss something that is a bit focused. What I'd like to do is really focus on one area of media delivery, which is being, for a lot of companies, a bit of a puzzle. And I think that it's something that we felt was really important at Intertrust to make this an easier experience for our customers when they're setting up high-end media delivery systems for things like Amazon Video or broadcasters in Europe and several customers that we've dealt with, and we've learned a lot of lessons about it, and we came to the conclusion that access in delivering the content protection platform is an important step towards making the entire rollout of an online video service easier. Because people understand storage, they understand caching, they understand streaming for the most part. A lot of this has been done through various technology evolutions, but they've been getting better and better, but they're known entities. And apps are becoming, the platforms for apps are becoming something that is very familiar now to developers. And so one of the remaining pieces that really is sort of a mystery and that really is sort of a difficult area for developers is integrating with a content protection system. And so having a service that is available through direct access to the internet, through a cloud-provided hosted system, is sort of the nirvana of content protection access. If you don't have to sign an NDA and then wait for the specifications and then realize that, oh, part of it I have to implement myself, and there are all these other standards I need to understand how to make it work with this video platform or that certain other video standard. And it ends up being this extremely complicated system, whether you're working with a standard that's developed by one company, and this has been throughout the years, Microsoft, Apple, Google, they've all had standards for content protection, right? But each one of them always has this sort of, oh, you didn't know that you had to develop this driver yourself. You didn't know that the only way you can get it running on this platform is by licensing from this one company. Or, you know, there's always these little hidden secrets about how to implement these content protection systems that made it extremely difficult to actually get to market. So we wanted to demystify this and make it something that if it's available in the cloud, you can just sign up for it and pay as you go, and all the tools are readily available, everything's downloadable, everything's sort of in front of your face. So that's one of the areas of cloud delivery services that we thought we really could get into, and no one else has really been into it and has made content protection that convenient. Well, one of the things that you need to do is develop an SDK. So you'll see that there are a lot of services out there that have, they'll have big data collection for how you use your app, and then they'll have an SDK to put in your app that collects all the data and pushes it up to the cloud so you can analyze it. Well, if you don't have the client-side component to it, a lot of times it's really not something that is going to add a lot of value. Just having the back-end system and the APIs to talk to the back-end, to talk to the cloud service, there are a lot of people who provide that. But when it comes to content protection, you need both ends of the system to be tied in together. And so we've developed an SDK solution that's readily downloadable, that you don't have to license and pay tens of thousands of dollars just to get it. You can download it for free. And we felt that the easy access to the cloud service and easy access to the tools for a cloud service, it's really important that you can kind of get everything for free and get up and running without having to really put even your credit card down. And for content protection systems, this is highly unusual. So the development on iOS and Android, obviously those are two big platforms, but we've taken a lot of time to make sure that those are super easy. So we've looked at other cloud services out there, we've looked at their kits for apps, and how did they tie their back-end service to the app platform, and we wanted to make sure there were tutorials, we wanted to make sure that there were basically a template for how to make your application tie into our system with three lines of code. And that was sort of our target for ease of use. If developers could do it in three lines of code, it's got to be really easy. And so we've been able to get to that point, but we look at other providers that are making app frameworks that talk to a back-end service. Those frameworks a lot of times are pretty complicated, and that's an area that we'd like to see a lot of cloud services making the application side of development to talk to the cloud service be also a really easy experience. Just signing up for the service shouldn't be the only easy part about it. And so having a test app or having an example app is another thing that when we looked at these services and we wanted to make it easy for developers, we realized that, okay, there are tutorials, but why not just give them the solution? Why not just say, here's an app that uses the system. If you want to protect your content and you want to get your content service out on the internet, here is an app that plays video and does it with a content protection system, so you can just look at how that works and copy that. And you don't have to figure out how the content protection system, the theory behind it, or how the mechanisms are underneath. You don't have to learn cryptography. You just have to see how this one case works and copy that. And again, it's a few lines of code that you're actually seeing and copying. So we wanted it to be super easy. So we've looked at offerings from the other major providers of content protection services. They're not necessarily in the cloud yet, but their tools for development are also, they require a lot of a learning curve. In fact, some of them have training sessions. So you can't even touch the software unless you go through their training session. And so you have to travel to their offices, and you have to get trained on it, and then they'll let you see it. And so that not great, not a really easy access kind of experience. And so we really felt that that's something we didn't want to do when we brought this online. One other important piece of content protection that a lot of media services that are launching don't take into account how complicated this can become on the back end when you're encoding all your content. A lot of people say, well, it's all standardized, it's all MPEG now, and so you know, H.264 is everywhere, it's in all the devices. Packaging for H.264 should be a no-brainer. There are about 20 companies that make packaging tools, so just pick one and go with it. Well, in reality, you actually need to make sure your content plays on these devices, and especially when you're encrypting the content and playing it back, there are a couple of levels of the stack of playing something back where things break. It doesn't pause right. It skips frames. It stutters. It's not bumping up and down the bit rates properly, so it hiccups when you have a better connection or a worse connection. All these things happen, and that's just with one format. So on Xbox, we work with app developers that are doing content protection on Xbox, and that uses a smooth streaming format. On iOS, it uses HLS. There are a lot of systems in Europe that use a format called Dash. Those are three different packaging systems that's independent of the content protection even. So when you merge the content protection format, you know, how you're encrypting it with the packaging system, there's a matrix of complexity that you need to get used to. And packaging content has actually gotten a bit more complicated with the more modern ways of streaming video. So with adaptive bitrate, with the ability to deliver a low bitrate stream, and then your phone can detect that your connection just got a little bit better, it switches to a higher bitrate stream midstream. So it doesn't rewind back to the beginning, it just gets crisper all of a sudden. And that adaptive bitrate video format actually requires you to encode it into 5 to 10 different bitrates and put them up in the cloud, and then you have to encrypt all of them. And then you have to have the keys for those stored in your storefront, and then the keys have to be accessible to the player through the DRM system or through content management or content protection management. So the packaging of the content isn't simple. So we felt that we really needed to provide a packaging tool that we know would work with the standards that today's content protection or our content protection, but also on standard platforms like iOS and Android would work. So the packaging tool is something that also comes with and is readily downloadable off of the site. That's really a nice thing to have when you're signing up for a content protection service and you don't want to realize later that, oh, you mean all the stuff we just encoded, all of our thousands of hours of episodes of content, we have to encode it again because there's something wrong about it that we didn't know there's a special packager for it. So it's important to take that into consideration. Now, when you have the packager, I was mentioning that you've got a bunch of different platforms and potentially different formats you need to support. Well, Dash, I mentioned, is one of the formats that is popular in Europe, and it's becoming an interesting format because it actually lets you secure the content and encrypt it in one way, and yet you can use multiple content protection systems with it. So a lot of studios have wondered, sort of scratched their head, well, we've got our content up with different platforms and different protection systems, so we've had to not only encode it in different ways, but we've had to encrypt it in different ways. And we have to support all these different files, and we have to store them in the cloud, and we have to, you know, make sure that they're all compatible by just basically making every single version under the sun. Well, we feel that it would be great if there was one format that supported all the different protection systems and all the different formats to be playable on Android, iOS, Xbox, everything. Well, Dash is looking like it has that potential. So we included that in the cloud service, and we talked to a lot of people in Europe and asked them, what are the standards that are really adopting this sort of common format? And it looks like there are, in France and Spain and in a few other countries, they're seriously considering this being the national standard that requires a common media format for internet delivery of video and certain content protection systems that work with that format. So we've taken that into consideration in our cloud service to make sure that that works as well, but it also saves you storage in the cloud because you're storing one version of the file encrypted one time. These standards can really help with that, but unfortunately, over the last 5 years, the major companies made their own standard, and now we're seeing some convergence opportunities, and we're hoping it moves more in that direction. As it is now, though, our packager does support multiple formats because it has to. And how does the packager work? Well, you put it in. There's a step of your workflow where you have a CMS that manages your content, and that CMS is going to push it through a pipeline of approval so that you're going to have to make sure it has all the subtitles, make sure it has all the regional requirements for where it's going to be delivered to, and then it has to be encoded for the platforms that are going to be for that service. So our packager, or packager for any content protection system, is stuck right in that path, right before it goes to the CDN. You want it to be protected. You don't want your content to be stored on the CDN cached in a way that you're not really managing how the CDN's holding your content. So you want it to be encrypted before it gets there. So we stick our packager in the pipeline, or you would put it in the pipeline right before you send it off to the CDN. Now this is a bit of a technical slide, and unfortunately not as readable as it is in the version before I exported it here. But the way in which content protection systems protect your content, I think a lot of service providers that are doing media services and they use content protection, they just sort of say, well, I hope it works, I hope the studios like it, I just want to use the one they told me to use. Well, there are now a few of them that the studios have approved, and we're one of them, but it's something that we feel is important to sort of demystify how content protection systems work. Over, just take streaming for example, you've got an app down below using our SDK that can decrypt the content. Well, really, content protection systems are a secure way of getting that content key, the key that can unlock the content, getting it to the player without the end user being able to have access to it. So it's really a roundabout way of delivering a key, a decryption key. So you've got the content that's encrypted and stored up in Akamai or Limelight or wherever you put your content, and then you've got this key to unlock it that you need to get down to the player when the player says, hey, can I play this thing I bought? That key's got to get there somehow. So the content protection system stores the key in the storefront of the service, and then through the DRM, it actually allows the key to be pushed to the player. So that's why you need the SDK in the app, because the app is going to be able to get a wrapped version of that key that it can then use to play the content. And so there's some DRM magic that that happens between the service and the SDK on the player that allows for that key to be delivered in such a way that you can't actually, the user can't grab it, or it can't be hacked, or it can't be unwrapped. And so that delivery mechanism really is perfect for it all to be hosted in the cloud, because then it allows your service, which is typically a cloud video service, to be linked to our DRM service or content protection service, which is also in the cloud. So the backend hookup ends up being super easy and all based in the cloud. And then the SDK in the device talks to our backend to unlock things. So cloud hosting of content protection actually makes total sense. So in the end, what we really want to get the point across for cloud computing and just moving services in the cloud is that a lot of these services become really useful in the cloud when they're very focused applications that are providing a certain service, and they provide a framework around integrating with that service easily. It's really important that not just this thing be in the cloud, but it's important that there's a whole suite of tools, an SDK, tutorials, examples, support. It has to be super easy to use. It has to be as easy to use as almost a consumer, you know, like Google Docs, or if people think that's easy to use, but you know, it should be as easy as signing up for something that is a consumer-oriented service where I can just kind of figure it out by trying a few things, and then, oh, I see there's this toolkit I can download, and then there's a tutorial that shows me how to use it. Really, these pieces should also be in the cloud presented with that service. It shouldn't just be, oh, well, there's these servers that we stuck in the cloud, and then we have this fleet of consultants that'll show you how to do it if you pay them. And we didn't want it to be that way. We wanted it to be something that was a completely self-serve entity where all the parts come with the service and are readily available through a dashboard, and you really can do it all yourself and figure it out yourself. So that's been our approach. And with something as typically as sort of secretive and difficult to unwrap as content protection systems, we felt that it was a great challenge for us to make it that easy when we put it in the cloud. So I know that I think I'm running a little early, but I'll, if anyone has any questions about cloud content protection, I'd be happy to answer them. Yes?
So you mentioned on the DASH standard, we've heard in the HTML5 standard they're proposing to have encryption
yes.
in the browser.
Right.
Can you maybe comment on that?
Sure.
Do you have to re-encode every frame? And
no.
How long will that take?
Right. You don't have to re-encode every frame, but right now, any video you're going to play on Chrome or you're going to play on IE is clear video. It's not encrypted, unless you use a plugin like Silverlight or Flash that it basically takes over a rectangular area of your browser and says, I'm going to do whatever I do in here. By the way, what I'm doing is none of your business, browser, and it goes off and it decrypts the content and it plays it in that little rectangular area. Well, plugins are, especially the Netscape-style plugins, are becoming more and more sort of thrown out as like legacy technology that a lot of the browser developers are saying, hey, we'd actually like to get off of that, and we like to go to our own extension framework. And this, this W3C standard, or that's not a standard yet, but it's a proposed standard, to put the JavaScript hooks in for saying, hey, this is encrypted content, and this is how you can decrypt it, by the way. And this is a hook to the back end that'll get you the key to decrypt it without needing a plugin. That's what it is. And it doesn't mean that it's not H.264. It's still H.264. Yeah, there are other standards of video out there, but for the most part, it's 90% H.264. And with this DRM standard, it's probably still going to be mostly H.264 for some time to come, but now it'll be protected. Whereas the browsers have no way of protecting it in a standard fashion.
Is it re-encoding the video, or is it in some type of tunnel?
No, it's actually pulling the encrypted stream of video, but then there's a JavaScript hook that says, okay, what DRM system is this piece of content that's encrypted using, and how can I get access to the key for this piece of content? It actually doesn't even want the key, really. It wants a pointer to the key, and it says, okay, player, play this, and it uses this key ID. Because if you had access to the key in JavaScript, you've already broken the security. So it actually is just a wrapper for the key sort of passing underneath, and the player just sort of magically getting it through whatever backend hooks. But the thing is, the browser, even if it supported these new standards, it still has to choose which DRMs it should implement natively, right? So let's say Internet Explorer decides to adopt these standards, and in fact, I think they've demonstrated it with Netflix as sort of a developer trial. And guess what DRM it's using only? It's using PlayReady only. It's using Microsoft DRM only. So even though a major browser developer is adopting this standard for identifying the DRM, if the browser doesn't have the ability to handle that DRM natively in the browser, it'll detect it as one it doesn't support, and it'll fail. So the detection system will standardize, but you still have to support the ability to use that DRM in the browser. So that challenge isn't going to go away, you know, in terms of interoperability until the browser vendors decide, okay, there are two or three, or one, let's say one or two standards that we're going to actually bake into our browser. Yeah.
Thank you. Thanks. Very much.